Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Fundamentalists Podcast. This is a podcast about life and how to deal with it, and how not to deal with it, and how to realize that it's okay if you're not good at dealing with it. It's a podcast from myself, Elliot Morgan. I do stand-up and internet comedy and a thing called The Valley Folk, which is really fun and cool. And I do it this podcast with my podcasting partner, Peter Rollins, who is a speaker and a writer and a philosopher and knows all sorts of fun things about all sorts of neat things. And we talk about life and we have a good time doing it. There's an order of service that we typically have with this podcast. And as such, it is as follows. We're going to tell you what we're up to. And then Pete's going to have a little bit of a reflection. And then at the end, we're going to do a takeaway. So the first thing up, and we're going to be talking about this for at least probably, well, gosh, this by the time this goes up, is the live event, is this the last one before the live event?
I suppose it is. Yeah, I suppose it would be.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, this is the last time you have to hear about this, folks. For people who aren't in Los Angeles, we're doing a live Fundamentalists podcast at Central Avenue Church in Glendale, California, which is adjacent to Los Angeles, California. It's in SoCal. Please come and visit. It's going to be very fun. We're going to have free booze. We did have some guests lined up. Unfortunately, live events are sometimes difficult to lock people in, and so that's not going to happen, but it's still going to be a wonderful time with wine and beer and friends and camaraderie and podcasting and questions and answers and comedy and philosophy. It's going to be super cool. So anyway, if you would like to come, you can check out peterrollins.com, go to the events page on his website, and you can find the info there. It's also available all over our social media on Twitter and Instagram and all that fun stuff. The other thing is that podcast, the live podcast, and this podcast in general, the only way we make any kind of scratch off of this is using a thing called Wink, which is a wine company. And if you go to trywink.com/fundamentalists, you can get $25 off your first order, and you can take a palate quiz to find out what kind of wines you like, and they're really cool and hipstery looking, and we have cases coming for the live event, and we're going to keep a lot of them to drink ourselves. But anyway, it's trywink.com/fundamentalists, trywink.com/fundamentalists. You get $25 off, and then that helps us keep doing this and pumping it out to you on a timely manner, which we are surprisingly kind of doing.
Yeah, well, we're recording this well in advance and not just a day before it has to go out.
Not just a day, yeah. A full week.
This is, yeah,
this impressive. Has never happened, Pete.
I know. And we're going to try and get another couple, Tom.
Yeah.
So
we're going to be stocked up. So that's pretty exciting. The subject matter this particular week, guys, since I haven't mentioned it yet, we're talking about comedy. And the way we're going to talk about comedy is we're going to see what happens. And so a lot of times when it's something that's a little bit more of a heady subject, we might take some time. Pete might take some time and come up with like a very profound reflection on it. And this particular time, we're going to have some profound reflections, but it's going to be a little bit more off the cuff. And we hope that's okay. And I myself do comedy. I have a lot of thoughts on comedy. I think comedy is really fun to explore in a unfunny way, which is what I like to do on stage. But I think it's a fascinating subject. I love it very much, and I think it does something to people and for people that they don't get in pretty much any other area of life. And we're kind of living right now in a wonderful time for comedy, especially for stand-up, with Netflix and the amount of specials out there right now. There's like so much access to such good stand-up comedy that it's really cool and really exciting, and it's amazing. And you can find, anybody can find anything that they like. If you like Jeff Foxworthy, you can watch that. And if you like, you know, this new girl that came out, I'm blanking on her name, but she did some amazing kind of emotional special, and people who know what I'm talking about know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so we're talking about comedy. Pete, what are your thoughts on comedy?
Well, we just came up with this about 10 minutes ago.
Yes.
So I didn't have a lot of time to do my usual pacing and reflecting, but I do have some thoughts on comedy. And it's around, this is a good place to start, I guess, and we'll see where it goes. And we can talk about our favorite comedians,
sure,
and whatnot.
All sorts of fun stuff.
All sorts of fun stuff. But what is it about a joke that makes it funny? And I think that basically in philosophy, in political philosophy, ideology is a term that is used for any kind of system of thought that covers over the antagonisms and the contradictions in life and the violence in life. So you have, And it's something in, like you have in the law courts where, you know, everybody gets prosecuted if they get caught with drugs. Mm-hmm. I think it's an example we've used before. But then in reality, if you're a hedge fund person caught with weed, you're going to get treated in a different way than if you're from a low income area. Right. So you have these contradictions in society, lots of contradictions. And ideology critique basically helps you see the kind of what's going on in society, but that we don't see. So the stuff that's going on all the time when we go to the supermarket, when we purchase things, when we talk with our friends. Ideology critique tries to show that beneath the surface of everything is normal, everything is fine, everything is good, there's all of this crazy stuff going on that we're aware of, but we don't allow ourselves to know. And I think basically comedy and jokes have a similar structure, that a joke is funny whenever it tells you something that you kind of already know. There's something absurd about the world that you know, but you've kind of avoided knowing, or you've repressed in some sort of way. So, I mean, this is observational comedy, yeah, basically. Yeah. But observational comedy, what is it observing? It's observing the underlying chaos and tensions and contradictions that are in life that we avoid. And this is why for me comedy is political. It's political not because it's of the left or anything like that. It's political because it's ideology critique. Whoever is in power, Republicans or Democrats or whatever, comedians bring to the surface the contradictions of life. Good comedians, I think, do it. So it's not that they're political in some sort of party political way. It's just they are showing us the craziness of the world we live in. What do you think of that?
I think that's really nice. Yeah. I don't necessarily think that that is, obviously this goes without saying, but that's not exhaustive in any way of like comedy. And I think that I would venture to say that any attempt to dissect comedy to the point of like understanding why it works and what makes it funny. I always think about, I was talking to somebody about this last night, a female woman, and it's rare that those two things go together.
Inside.
But we were talking about comedy classes and like different comedy classes in LA. And she was saying that there's, you know, all the terms and the reversals and the misdirections and kind of like the experience she had of learning the ins and outs of comedy and like the sort of, I almost said liturgical, but like logistic kind of like, this is what this is.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's a phrase that Pete Holmes, I heard him use one time where it's like, and I don't know if it's from him or not, but it was about dissecting the bird and like this idea that like, comedy, there's like a silliness to so much of it too. Like there's a absurdity to the character work, to the farting, to the dick jokes. There's a vulgarity. There's something about so much of comedy that I think if you dissect it too much, you lose it. Like in dissecting the bird, I think is a beautiful way to put that, because it's like you can end up being like, well, this is funny because X, Y, and Z, and by the time you're done, that joke is definitely not funny anymore.
Yeah, I don't. I know what you're saying. Like, for example, if you're good at sports, you don't have to know the science of sports. Or if you're kind of, if you fly, you don't need to know how an airplane works. You need to know basics. But actually, if you know too much, it can kind of count against. So I totally agree with you.
You can get lost in the weeds a little.
Get lost in the weeds, but I think they're two different things. Like,
it doesn't change the fact that the stuff we're talking about is still happening.
Yeah, and also, you know, you can be, you know, so like a film critic, film theorist can not know how to make a movie. They maybe be a terrible director or whatever, but they'd be very good at understanding what makes a certain film palpable to the audience.
Yeah, it's almost like if you speak a language, or like you can hear a language, but you can't really speak it very well. Yeah. And it's like you couldn't engage in conversation, but you know what somebody's saying to you better than maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Like a hypnotist doesn't need to know why hypnosis works. They just need to know the techniques. Yeah. But of course, a hypnotist will have a little bit of an interest, but they're not going to be able, they're not going to know the ins and outs necessarily. So, you know, I don't think, I would say like comedy is not, it's not magical in the sense of, I think there is a way to understand how it's working, but you don't bring that to the stage.
Yeah.
It's like a psychotherapist. They have a very, or psychoanalyst has a very abstract set of principles, but they don't bring it to the, they don't bring it to the couch.
Sure.
So
that's interesting. Yeah.
But I know you might disagree with that, and maybe I disagree with myself on it. I'm not sure.
I think the difference is like, if you hear something like this and you're like, well, this is how, this is what makes this funny. And you can get, and then you're like retroactively, you can be, or not even retroactively, preemptively, you can be like, oh, well, you know, this has to fit this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And if this isn't, you know, story A, you know, leads you in a certain direction, but then the punchline is C. And so and then there's, you know, there's all these like fun little graphs and stuff for like joke writing. And I love all of them. And I think they're super cool. It just gets to a point where, especially with comedy, where it's like, it's such a popular thing right now, and it's so needed, and it's being put on a pedestal, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. And then there's sort of a sexiness to being a comedian for the first time in like probably since like the 80s or 90s or before that, before, you know, aughts or whatever. But like there, I guess, always has been. But there's also like, you know, these used to be like the jesters, and they used to be these like the lowest of the low. And then what, something I found out recently, or like not found out, but slowly I'm realizing, is none of that changed. Like the people that I, and I'm very grateful for it, to like be in the world in any sense, at least the stand-up world. But people who are in comedy tend to be a little rougher around the edges, and a little bit more down to earth, and a little more politically incorrect. And there is a authenticity to them that is so enticing. But there's also just like these people, half of these people are out of their minds, like they're off their rockers. And I also love that. So it's interesting, like that's still happening. There's something about this, like, this profession or this art that draws people to it who are already sort of, or maybe it's, you know, I don't know if it's,
and you know what the problem might be is, you know, we watched a stand-up comedian on Netflix recently, and he was a guy that you really like, but when we started watching it, I think you felt the same as me, but there was something that wasn't connecting and I couldn't put my finger on it.
Yeah.
And then I realized it was like he looked too professional, and the stage was too big, and the audience was absolutely massive, and it felt, it was like, there's something about comedy that is edgy.
Yeah.
It's like YouTubers.
Yep.
It's as soon as we talked about this, because you said, like, as soon as YouTubers get too big and they start hanging out with stars, and they have like a, they suddenly, it becomes like a TV studio and not their bedroom. It's, they kind of lose something because there's something about the comedian that is rough and ready.
Yeah. It's the grit. Yeah. And you gotta have that. And if you don't, then and if it becomes the superstar thing, or like, it's very tough. And what we're, I mean, in fairness, I've not to whatever, but I've watched, since rewatched that special that we're talking about, which I would never name names and say that I was critical of anybody who I love and admire, but I love and admire this person very much. But the special is Kid Gorgeous. You're thinking of John Mulaney's Radio City Hall.
Ah, yeah. And by the way, utmost respect for that guy.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have seen, this is not a, like, oh my goodness, that guy is so good. And I almost feel that he's a victim of being so good.
Exactly,
That someone is thrown, because there's an economics behind comedians. I think there's a resurgence because sadly, people like Netflix realize it's super cheap to make a one-hour comedy special.
Yeah.
But then someone has maybe said to him, we will throw a pile of money at this.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be cheaper than one episode of Game of Thrones.
Exactly, yeah.
But,
I know.
But you said you rewatched it. How, what was your feeling when you rewatched it?
If you rewatch it and you can get past the glitz and the glamour, I think it's his best. It's his best stuff, yeah. But it takes a little bit of time. And that being said, I can be kind of critical of him, but only in the sense of, like, he's a hero of mine. So it's not like he's one of the major reasons I got involved in stand-up, because I remember watching, it was him, it was his special New in Town, and I remember being like, oh, there are people making comedy, stand-up comedy, for me. And it was the first time I realized that. Like, before, stand-up comedy was always something where it was like, well, that's for people who are into, like, you know, like, it's Bill Engvall or something, and that's, he's maybe can be funny, but he's not my cup of tea. And then John Mulaney comes along, and he, in many ways, was this sort of like voice of a generation, and still is. And and like Oh Hello, I think on Netflix, is one of the best things I've ever seen, to the point of like having to pause it because I was by myself laughing too hard, which I've never experienced in my life. So like, he's clearly a genius, but he made me want to get heavily involved, and then Bo Burnham's What was the other one?
That guy is incredible.
He's just he is a level of, he's the kind of talent that does literally make me believe in God. Like there's I see him and I'm like, whatever this guy got is a absolute lottery ticket DNA or something. Yeah. Like he's gifted. He's any word or whatever.
He's obsessively gifted. You can tell that he's obsessive in the amount of effort he puts into the smallest detail. When you showed me that one, the one man's show that he did, that was just, I want to rewatch it because I was just so impressed by how he put that together.
Make Happy or what?
The one where he, was it Make Happy? I don't know what it was called.
Make Happy was his most recent one.
No, I think it was his first one. I think it was...
Yeah, What was the one that made me go
The
this
one that
guy.
He put free on his YouTube channel.
Yeah, and, What. Yeah, which is also, that in and of itself was like beautiful. And I guess that was some kind of weird, like Netflix was just like,
yeah.
Like, if you want to do that, do it. He was like, okay.
The difficulty is, because you can't, like, and that was massive, but it's like, whenever you're, the writers of James Bond, they have a dilemma because you have to dress James Bond up in a tuxedo.
Yeah.
And he has to wear an Omega watch and all that crap, right? But he has to look like he doesn't care, right? That's the difficulty. If it looks like he cares, then the figure doesn't work. So James Bond is like this edgy character, but weirdly, you can dress up. And I feel it's the same with the comedian. You can put them in a very big studio. You can give them all of that, but they have to look as if they don't care.
Yeah.
They have to wear it with a certain disdain. And that's a difficult thing to get.
Yeah.
You know? But there was, and it was actually my friend Kristen, who she said that she watched that. She's a big fan of Delaney, or is that his name, Delaney?
Mulaney.
But she was the one who said, I think it was the size of, it was the glitz of it. It was the glamour of it.
It's shocking.
The form took away from the content.
Yeah.
And in comedy, the form, I think, has to be gritty. Not all the time, but I think it's part of it.
You know, I wonder if there's like a thing that's happened. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, but like the privatization versus public life and all that. And like, you know, I got a little thing at Target to hang on my wall. And like, I went there and I went to the store and it was like, I always assume it's going to be the least bit of hassle. Like I'll have to wait in line or something. And literally it's like a red carpet. You go up and they're like, show my ID. They give me the item. They don't hand me a receipt, which for some reason to me was the most luxurious thing ever. I'm like, don't hand me a piece of trash. It's like every time I buy something, people hand me a piece of trash. And I'm like, I don't want the piece. I just end up, I'm like, I hate it so much. I'm never going to use it. I'm not good like that.
It's just like human beings are the middle people between the receipt and the trash can.
Yeah.
It's like we have evolved to basically put that thing
exactly
into the bin.
Yeah,
that like is our purpose.
Print out this useless thing. I will go put it in your trash can. Yeah. And so anyway, it was so convenient. And you were talking about you ordered headphones or something, and they like appeared and immediately. And it's like, we can order anything so quickly. And like, I decided to buy that and had it in my hanging on my wall in like a span of an hour and a half or something like that, which is insane. And it speaks to the level of comfort that we're all sort of getting into in our homes. And I think what's happening is the home now in the living room and the bed has become similar to what a comedy club is, where there's an intimacy with the performer because you're watching it on a laptop or you're watching it on your TV and you're able to laugh freely at those jokes. And sometimes I think maybe the glitz and the glamour makes it a little bit tougher for people to like to step into that, because they're all of a sudden they're like, it's one thing if you see a tightly filmed comedy special that feels very close and intimate, then you can kind of be alone to laugh or not laugh. But when you see that level, it's, I think, probably feels more like they're in public, and that makes people more uncomfortable.
And I think, I mean, for me, existentialism, which is a very European philosophy, never really penetrated America deeply. There's some pockets of it, but one of the areas it did was comedy. I think in America, existentialism is alive and well in comedians. And to be an existential thinker is to be a little bit on the outside. It's to not be on the inside. It's to see the world in a slightly skewed way, see things that others don't see. And so a comedian who is, and that's why by definition, comedians who are for the establishment aren't often very funny, is because there is something that they are outsider characters, I think, in their very form. And that's why, like, the amount of comedians I know now through you and elsewhere, most comedians are they are a little bit outsiders. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't feel they fit in, whether it's been in school, whether it's because of depression, whatever it is, they're a little bit, they don't fit and they're comfortable with not fitting.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. Yep. For the viewer, I think too, it's like if you're going to see that figure, that sort of like outsider figure, mm-hmm. you yourself need to feel like you are in a safe space, and for lack of a better term. But like, I think that's why the comedy club works so well and why it's such a beautiful thing. And like, I do believe live, and I don't mean live stand-up either, like any kind of improv or sketch or whatever, like I'm always like, people should go see live comedy, because when you see that level of absurdity and silliness and debauchery and dumbness and an embracing of like the contradiction and embracing of like the weaknesses that we all have or whatever, and you're in, you yeah. see it in bright lights, but you yourself are 10 feet away from it, but you're in the safety of like being surrounded by your friends with like a $4 bottle, a glass of wine or something. That I think is like the coolest thing.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I think when you walk out of it, you truly do feel like your life was somehow enriched, and then you're making jokes more and you feel looser. And like, there's a beauty to it that I think is, I'm very glad we're in the world yeah. that we're living in right now. Cause everyone seems to be, for starters, everyone also thinks that they can do it, which is fine. I mean, I'm still under the delusion that I can, and mm-hmm. you know, we'll see how long this lasts, but like, it is funny too. It's like one of those things of like writing a book, like everybody's like, I have a book in me. It's like, well, you've never written one, so you don't, you know what I mean? But like stand up seems to be, and comedy seems to be a similar thing where it's like, oh, I wonder. But that also, I think, plays into people being like,
I love that about, I mean, there's another two things I've noticed about comedy being in LA that I really love. One is that in these comedy shows, there is an openness to let anybody get on stage. You know, that there's people who are less than good that are often on. And actually, it's not a very harsh environment. People are not there to destroy the person on stage if they're terrible.
Not in LA.
Yeah. And we even kind of laugh at the badness, but it's not even laughing at the person. You're laughing with them mm-hmm. and at them, and it's a warm environment, but there is a welcoming nature to stand up that mm-hmm. I've seen that's rare, which I love. So it's outsider. It's welcoming to people who, you know, want to give it a blast. And also the thing that I really love is that most of these comedians are doing it and they're getting paid nothing. Mm-hmm. And even the ones who are successful still want to go to the stand-up show and just get up and do some comedy for the price of a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
I'm like I don't see that very many places in the world, like a non-economic, financial economic kind of system. Mm-hmm. It's really a system where it's like, it's about something else. It's about,
it really is.
I need to get this stuff out. I want to do this. I want to be part of that environment. I'm like, whoa, in our consumeristic world, to be part of a community and to hang out with people who really aren't thinking like that is amazing.
It's very cool. And it also speaks to the level of the rush that those people are getting, you know, where it's like, you can be making millions of dollars, but at the end of the day, if there's a room full of 50 people who are going to burst out laughing at every word you say for 15 minutes, like, yeah, you're still going to want to, you know, do that. But I was listening to this podcast with Malcolm Gladwell. I listen to his podcast a fair amount, and he was talking about how comedians, he had this real fresh Malcolm Gladwell hot take where he was saying like comedians are not actually, the question was like, what professions are most, besides like psychologists, are most aware of the human condition? And the guy asking the question was like, well, comedians are aware of the human condition. And Malcolm Gladwell was like, no, they're not. He was like, they basically get up, they say their jokes, and they're in an environment where it's dark, people are drinking. And he's like, have you ever told jokes in front of a crowd of drunk people? It's like taking candy from a baby. It's like, it's the easiest thing in the world. He's like, they get up. He's like, I don't buy into the sacrifice of like the comedian who gets up and like, oh, they don't think it's funny and they bomb. It's like, it's not that hard and all this stuff. And I was like, it's very interesting because he's like, I was like wanting to, it was one of those.
I think that's a, if that's what he was saying, I think that's a bad hot take.
Oh, it's literally the worst thing I've ever heard him say, because I was like, first of all, that's not what a comedian does.
Yeah.
The job of a comedian is not just in the 10 minutes that he's on stage. The job of the comedian is in the hours before that, when he's like in the life and he's mining from the life that he or she has lived, and they're taking that like that stuff and they're making, I mean, it's like, that's where the work is.
Yeah.
And then the fun part is you get to go on stage and say your jokes, and then on top of that fun part, you have to craft a performance, and that's difficult. I agree that comedians get that, to use a vulgar term, they like to stroke their own egos a little bit in terms of like, oh, it's so tough to like went like oh bombing and like blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of like kind of martyrous stuff there, but at the same time, it does suck. You are still devoting your existence to something where at the drop of a hat, a drunk crowd can turn on you. And like, it was such a, I've never heard the guy miss the mark that badly.
Well, I'm not a fan of Malcolm Gladwell. I don't think he's got very many hot takes, but no, because animals, first of all, animals, you know, don't seem to have jokes like we do. Yeah, there may be some higher animals that do, but
I can almost bet you dolphins are messing around with each other's jokes.
Yeah, but the reason why kind of lower kind of life forms don't have jokes is because I think it is partly the structure of, I mean, without getting too philosophical, we want to do a lighter one this time, but
no, this is fine.
The antagonisms of life that the antagonism that is evolution comes into humanity through language. So human beings, the antagonisms of life and existence enter into the social world. And it really is a person who is able to make us aware of those antagonisms in whatever way. Even the earlier you said, you talked about a comedian, you said a female woman, right?
Yeah,
so it's a little tiny joke, wasn't even, it's like it's a jokeette, right? But
mostly what, safeguarding around the fact that I had to specify that she was female, and then I heard a chorus of people being like, why has she got to be female? No, Elliot, and then I saw a gun being put in my own mouth.
No, but that's the point. All of that was communicated in the joke. So as soon as you said it, it was like the most minuscule joke, which is a female woman, but anyone who's listening, it's that, or not even consciously, but what makes that funny ish is a sense in which, oh yeah, There is a tension and a complexity around that language, and the comedian names it, but they name it in like this tiniest way. So the contradictions and the tensions that exist within gender language there was communicated.
And if you listen closely, you can even hear the communication of me hesitating after saying that, because I was like, shit, do we need to edit that out of the
Yeah, but I thought that podcast. Was, for me, that was all part of the joke. I heard the hesitation and go like, that's a joke. And we're talking about joke as in not funny, like a laugh out loud, but it's a joke. It's the structure
it's
of a joke.
It's a piece of humor, and it's a piece dryly of delivered.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the reason why I call that a joke, even though it's not designed to make people laugh, it's a joke because what you did is you articulated kind of like something that we all know. Attention and antagonism becomes available, and other animals like dogs and cats, I don't think can do that.
Yeah, there is such a funny conversation of like the stand-up, one of the reasons I love stand-up is because you are up there by yourself. So if you're explaining something, you have to be having a conversation by yourself in a way that acknowledges what people are going to be thinking along the way.
Yeah.
And that's really fun. Like part of the reason, and I know you're not a Malcolm Gladwell fan, and obviously I disagree with him on many things, but like, which I want to talk more about that. I want to know why specifically you don't like him.
Yeah. Well, it's also obvious. That's the problem. It's like what he says is just like so laughably obvious.
That one especially. That one to me reeked a little bit of like he doesn't like how popular comedians are right now. Yeah. And there's a little bit of hot take of like an obligatory contrarian kind of thing where you're like, oh, you have to, of course you don't like comedians. Like I'd like to hear what he was trying to say,
because that I don't understand, as in it seems like the obvious thing that comedians do have. I mean, I understand they don't have a conscious awareness necessarily of psychology, but to be able to kind of like even that term you introduced me to it, and I think it's probably a common one now, but humble brag, you know, like it's a funny little joke when you say something like, oh, I went to Target today, humble brag, whatever. But that little joke shows a deep understanding of how human beings do this thing called humble bragging, and then it's a kind of a piss take on that, and how, you know, where you can be humble about, you can be bragging about something ridiculous, but everything that's captured in that phrase shows an inherent understanding of the psychological complexity of individuals.
Yeah There's humble brag, that's a really good one, and then there's also name drop is another fun one that you can do. So name drop, and I've stopped, humble brag and name drop are I think they're like crutch jokes where it's like you say it because you don't want to come off like an asshole. So your way of not coming off like an asshole is to come off like an asshole. Yeah. And which is fine, but I think it's funnier now to like if I name drop, I never say that I'm name dropping. Like, yeah. I know it pisses people off because it, like, I'll be like, oh, you know, I mean, one time I was,
Did I was talking to my mom the other day, name drop.
That one, or if it's, that's a classic one. That's for sure. And that one I do still do sometimes. Like, yeah, I'm talking to my brother, name drop. It's funny too to say it when it's not a name.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like, that's what I was thinking. That's what makes
that's
it funny.
Funnier to me. Yeah, for sure. But the one that's, if it's like an actual name drop,
yeah,
I really love not calling out. I love waiting for other people to do it because it always happens. And then somebody makes a joke about it. And then I'm like, it's just that's more trolling than
but
anything.
That's why comedians, that's an example of how comedians do understand the social condition, because most people in the world, we kind of know that stuff. Like people name drop, humble brag, but we don't know that we know it. We're not aware of this silly and ridiculous and kind of like all these games that we play. But comedians, I think, are just so painfully aware of the games that they play and the games that others play, and they call it out.
Or not calling it out is its own game.
Yes, exactly, because that's another just smarter level of it, is you're able to know what your fellow comedians are thinking, not call it out, which becomes its own comedy.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun like little tit for tat games, because I mean, by the grace of God, I can hang out with comedians. I get to hang out with funny people all the time. And it becomes, you know, I stay quiet sometimes just because it's physically exhausting. It's like any conversation, you're kind of entering into like a sparring match where it's like, and it's just, it's beautiful. And it's very, it keeps us, I think we're all getting sharper together, and it's really nice. But like, yeah, there is a thing of like so many layers. Every conversation has all these layers. And if you can have a simple conversation and then like expose those layers, it makes it really fun to do. I want to take a second though.
Yep.
And I want to bring up this podcast.
Oh yeah.
That'd here we cool. go. Not only what will make people laugh, but also what's right on the edge of making people uncomfortable. And that requires a lot of insight into the immediate reactions that your audience is going to have. And so I think comedians are master psychologists.
Oh, I agree or disagree?
Totally disagree.
Because
who invited you?
Think about this. No, think about this, Adam. So I have I'm using the principal teacher as my model. You're using the comedian. The thing that's difficult about the teacher is that the teacher is dealing with people in a natural environment in real time, and there is an infinite variety in the circumstances and the kinds of people that they have to interact with. The comedian, by contrast, is dealing with people in a tightly controlled setting with a rich set of expectations governing their behavior, where they get to turn down the lights, dose everyone with alcohol, you know, and create an expectation that laughter is the appropriate response to what they're doing. I cannot imagine a better set of circumstances, an easier set of circumstances for navigating a social situation than those.
So if that's true, when are you ready for your first stand-up performance?
I would, if you're asking me, that's not the right answer. The best question is, if you're asking me, would I rather teach a class of first graders or do a stand-up performance? The answer is, I would do a stand-up performance a million times before I would teach a class of first graders. Infinitely harder.
I cannot wait to present you with both options and see what you really choose.
But I mean, how can you, it's not even close, by the way. Stand-up, one of the things that stand-up comedians do that drives me crazy is that they like to pretend that their profession is this terrifying, death-defying, you know, high wire act.
Not wrong.
Have you ever given a performance before a group of people who have been drinking? They are putty in your hands. It's like they're sitting there, they're dosed up with alcohol, waiting to be entertained. That is about as far as you can get from a room full of first graders as is humanly imaginable.
What he's done is he's, like, I understand what he's saying, but I think the misunderstanding is, I don't think the first guy was saying that a comedian is a teacher.
He's not saying a comedian's job is harder than a teacher's.
Yeah, they're very different things. I think what he was saying is, well, a master psychologist is a very poor way of putting it, but you can understand what he's saying, which is comedians have an intuitive grasp of the human condition. Not that they're there to teach the audience about that human condition, but they bring it to the surface in the comedy. So, yeah, Malcolm Gladwell's right in the sense of a comedian would be a terrible teacher. They don't have the education. They don't have a PhD and whatever. But I don't think that's what the guy meant.
Well, no. And also to reduce what the comedian does to the fact that his audience is drunk is total bullshit. Like, that's a horrible, that's a complete, first of all, what is Malcolm Gladwell's impression of a comedy club? Does he think people are just wasted the entire time?
Most people don't drink at all, in LA especially.
Yeah, it's $14 like, a drink. There's a reason there's a two-drink minimum, because they force you to have two drinks.
Also, the comedy shows are very early here. Like, they start sometimes like 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
People are not drinking until 10:30, 11.
And even if it's midnight and they're drunk, okay, let's say it's worst case scenario. It's 1 a.m. at the Laugh Factory on a Saturday night. It's a packed house. Chappelle's due in 40 minutes, impromptu. Oh, my God. What? Okay.
Yeah.
So people are, so the act of what he's doing now and like the, well, I guess he kind of makes a good point. Yeah, there's a little bit of a, I do kind of partially agree with what he's saying. If you're super drunk and you are favorable in any way toward the audience, you're in a good situation. But most comedians aren't favorable toward the audiences that they're performing.
Here's the other thing as well. Like, so I'm a public speaker, not a comedian. And I've noticed in my world, it is really easy to get people to laugh because they don't have an expectation to laugh.
Yeah.
So I know some public speakers who are not very funny, but they get huge laughs because the audience is actually thinking they're going to get a boring lecture.
Yeah.
And what they get is somebody who, you know, is quite funny.
So a misdirection works. It works like gangbusters.
Oh my goodness. I can have an audience laughing who don't expect it to be funny. That is easy for me to get an audience to laugh. But if I'm going into a comedy store, because I've thought about doing comedy, you know, but I'm like, no, you have to be properly good. Because it is true, people are there to laugh. They have an expectation. Malcolm Gladwell's definitely correct in that. But actually, as you've experienced, because you spoke at one of my events where people are not there primarily for comedy, they love it. It's like the misdirection and the surprise that the person is funny is like is huge. And you know, people are always surprised when you're funny. So,
and when you're funny, it allows you.
When you're funny.
Oh my God, they're shocked. Yeah, but when you do the jokes, and then everyone's like, "Oh, Pete knows how to say jokes," and then they're like, "Oh, that's funny." And then later you say something serious. That contrast, and this goes kind of into the Todd McGowan talk, which, if you're listening, the podcast that I have, Todd McGowan, is available. And readily available on the Fundamentalist page. And if I remember the title of it off the top of my head, I would absolutely tell you what it was. But it was something, Todd McGowan's in the title, search it. Anyway, he wrote a book about comedy, but his main sort of thesis or crux of it, I think, is this idea of the lack and excess. And I think that that is a great lens to look at comedy through, because if you look at any type of, it's one thing to talk about the political sort of the ideological stuff that masks over things, and I totally believe that, but if you zoom out even further to the fart jokes, to the character work, the absurd, the silly voices and the silly faces and the stuff that's completely like the most simple jokes, because everyone likes smart humor, but when you can do like, or everyone says they like smart humor, but like then you get into like this, the just in your face Will Ferrell SNL, like, you know, Seth Rogen type of comedy. And I think you can still use the lack and excess lens to view those through, and it does make everything make sense. And if you can identify that lack and excess, then it's super fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun little puzzle.
Now, I'm a big fan of Todd McGowan, but I haven't read that book on jokes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm guessing what he's meaning is, is similar, because we come from a similar background. To this lack and excess is similar to this notion of the comedian is able to see the ruptures and the tensions and antagonisms.
Yes.
That's why Malcolm Gladwell, I think, is wrong. Not the other stuff. I mean, all the other stuff is just whatever an opinion is. But the big key that I think you miss, if you don't say this, you miss what a comedian is about, is that a comedian brings to light the underlying things that we see but don't know that we see. They bring to light the absurdities and the ridiculous kind of realities that we live in.
Yeah.
And that is an art form. That is an art form, because the majority of people don't see it. We see it when the comedian points it out.
Mm-hmm.
But
the best thing that I remember watching the Mulaney special with my parents in Florida, and my favorite thing to hear, it was Mulaney's joke, one of the best jokes written in so long, and it's about Trump, and it's about a horse in a hospital, and I don't want to spoil it, but it's so funny. And at the end of it, my dad, who is a more of a conservative Trump supporting individual, was like, and this is a joke, and the premise of the joke, of course, is, you know, not pro Trump in any way, but at the end of the joke, my dad just goes, that is so true. That's true. And I was like, that was a guy who politically supports somebody who just saw a comedian say a joke that in a very subtle way was against this president. And then at the end of the joke was able to go, yep.
Yeah.
And like, that was that, I was like, there, that, what, that's there it is. This is the beauty. That's the height of comedy.
Yeah. I mean, that's in a different way, but similar. Like when I saw Louis C.K., it was a couple of years ago now, and he did a whole piece on death, and I don't want to be confronted by my own death or my own finitude. And he just talked about being a middle-aged man, like being a bit of a mess and confronting his own death. I was laughing, I was reflecting on it, but I came out being confronted with something that I didn't want to be confronted with necessarily. But I felt like I had confronted it, and I felt lighter for it. So comedians do bring up unpalatable subjects, but somehow, that's why only a comedian can save us. I worry that comedians will get nailed to the wall in our contemporary society, because I think actually comedy is required for a society to progress. Mm-hmm. And it's partly because of that very thing that Mulaney did with that horse joke.
Yeah.
And what Louis C.K. did with that death stuff is incredibly important.
It's when Bo Burnham did the song, the They Think They Know You song at the end of What? And he has all the sort of disembodied voices coming into his head, articulating what people think about him. And that was one of the first times in my life where I was like, oh, I do know the feeling of that, of people being like, oh, I know what this guy is. And I never, I think, consciously acknowledged that. And so when I saw it, I remember just like tears were coming down my eyes. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is what it is. There is this feeling of being an outsider that he perfectly encapsulates with that song, using this freaking creative, weird performance. And I was like, that this is what, and it, I definitely, it was a similar thing, I imagine, where it was like at the end, I was like, oh, I'm a slightly changed person now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for me, the very form of comedy, and there's one exception, which I want to come to in a second, but the very form of comedy is this exposure, this unconcealing of the crazy. And even if that's not done in an existential or political way, the very form, I think, is political. The very form is
which you're using that term in a very like clinical way.
Very clinical way. Yeah. And the one thing that might fall outside of this is there's a comedian in Northern Ireland called Paul Curry, and he does absurdist comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just he acts completely crazy on stage and does really like really funny things, but they're completely absurdist. And I haven't thought much about what absurdist comedy is doing.
Right.
Because it in one sense, it's not revealing anything. I don't know what, like he just, you're just watching somebody act in a completely irreverent and bizarre way.
I do still, this goes back to like, I maintain there's a little bit of magic in that, those types of old comedy that are like commedia dell'arte and clowning, and like a lot of the types of things where it's like, it's just so weird and off the wall that I don't know that it necessarily does fit into like the thing, but I also might just want to maintain that belief
you like a little bit of
magic.
You like a little bit of magic.
That's the quote of the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I all that stuff, that when you get into like the vaudeville stuff too. Yeah. And I was reading this like history of comedians, I think, is this really cool book, and I don't remember the exact title, but it kind of went through American comedy, starting with vaudeville and then going into like radio and going into television and then movies and kind of where we're at now. And the vaudeville stuff was always very like, and then the, going into the radio and the TV, it was so interesting to see, you know, and then you have things like blackface, and you have all these like sort of like Bob Hope was one of the, was considered one of the greatest comedians, if not the greatest comedian of all time, and he did blackface at the beginning of his career, and it was sort of like, it's interesting when there are times when society kind of catches up and is like, no,
yeah,
like you can't, that's not, and then all of a sudden there's the other conversation, which is what, like you're saying, it can flip the other way, where comedians are sort of thrown out outright, where it's like they might have something of value to say still amidst, but they are outsiders and they do suck sometimes. So it's very difficult. I saw this tweet from Norm Macdonald that was like, who's my favorite living comedian, older at least, and he was saying that you could make a case that Bill Cosby is the greatest comedian of all time, and then it's like, okay, that's a very difficult thing to read because you want to hear nothing but bad about Bill Cosby now based off of everything. And then you have people like Louis C.K. goes away because, you know, X, Y, and Z, he's taking out his pee-pee in front of people and being a bad person or you know, doing things that have come to light that he shouldn't have done. And then so he goes away, and it's like he at the time was considered the greatest of all time. And it's like, well, there's something. You have Pryor, who was arrested however many times and was abusive and all these things. And it's like you have these people who they're troublemakers. Like they've always been troublemakers. And a lot of them found comedy as a way to be a troublemaker. A lot of them found comedy as a way to, because they were never able to fit in and never able to talk to women. And so they started talking about their anxieties on stage. And I think that's very beautiful. But it's a requiring of a certain level of like, to be a good human, I don't think necessarily is to be a good comedian.
Oh yeah, no, that absolutely not. Yeah,
all that to say that.
Yeah,
all that meandering around, like, how do I still kind of say that the things they did are bad, but the things that they did are also, you know, very funny at times. So, anyway.
But you did mention the vaudeville thing, and actually thinking about the absurdity idea and this guy Paul Curry, there is, I think, a real political dimension to that type of comedy in that. Dadaism, surrealism, and cabaret all arose as forms of critique of meaning. They all and so Dadaism was like the order of Nazi fascism, the hierarchy. So there was this sense of which kind of like the underlying chaos behind everything. And so again, even absurdist comedy, the French clowning tradition, etc., is, you can see that as also having this political dimension, which is, it is like, it's like Occupy Wall Street politically. It was not another way of thinking about how we should do politics. It was basically a rupture in politics. The Shoah or the Holocaust within the Jewish tradition, within European history, is not meaningful. It's what breaks meaning apart.
Sure.
Crucifixion in Christianity, again, is not meaningful, no matter how much religious people try and make it. It's more the rupture of meaning. And Dadaism, surrealism, these are ruptures in meaning. Punk is a rupture of meaning in music.
Yeah, you're right.
So I'm kind of going like, there is a there is this really interesting political dimension to absurdist comedy.
Yeah, there really is. Yeah. It's still, I guess.
But blackface is difficult because that was a form of comedy that is the opposite. In the sense of, it's a form of comedy that was basically what, legitimizing forms of oppression.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's weird when comedy is used. Like, I have a secret love of comedians who are.
I thought you were about to say something.
Cut.
You were about to. No. Yeah,
don't go there. No.
Actually, on the subject of blackface, I love. No.
No. Stop. Stop. No.
I still want to release this episode so far.
No, I have a secret love of comedians who are conservative, whether it's like religious comedians or there's a guy on Fox News. And because I'm fascinated by how comedy is sometimes used to legitimate kind of like conservatism, and it's obviously not very funny, but it's still, they're trying to do it, and I'm like, yeah, I have to figure that out.
I know, I did a video on this a while back, but it was about kind of conservative, why conservative comedians aren't funny, and it was basically like, if I think in order to be any kind of artist, you zoom out as much as possible, and you have to be able to see things from an aerial perspective a little bit, and when you can do that in any way, Yeah. As a human, whatever, you can see things in a much more like breathful, like it's a refreshing way to view the view to view the world when you can step back at any point, either on a personal level or political or anything. Excuse me. And if you're a conservative, if you're a conservative person, you tend to hold things very tightly. You tend to be like, no, this is the way that it's supposed to be, and this is how it is and was, and this is how if we lose this, we lose that, and it's a slippery slope, and like the very like weird mental stress put on the person who is the conservative, I think, keeps them from being able to. Those chambers don't open up as much, which may be me going into my magical comedy world, but I still think I'm right.
No, it's true. Like I think occasionally progressives, liberals, and conservatives can be funny, but it's very rare.
Yeah.
And I think it's very rare because, and I kind of lump them all in together a little bit because a progressivism is usually, you know, it's about letting more and more people into the status quo. It's not a critique of the political system. It's more the system is not working for some people, so get more into it.
Yeah.
So whereas I think the comedian is the one who exposes the problems with the system itself. But it is true that you'll get occasionally conservative, progressive, liberal comedians who are funny, but I think it's very hard.
I think especially because they are in and of themselves boxed into making jokes that have an agenda. Like the joke of liberals do this too, and it drives me up a freaking wall when people are like, they're liberals and they're Democrats, and like every joke is like, ha ha, it does suck when there's men, right? And it's like, if you're pushing that, then I'm not on board either. But if you reveal a joke that shows how crappy men can be, in and of itself, I think that's fun. Like, if that makes sense. Like, when I know that you have a motivation, and I do this, I have motivations and jokes that I write where I'm trying to like make people think a certain way, and I sometimes end up hating those jokes a lot.
Yeah. But that's it. Yeah. So it's when, I mean, and again, yeah, I hear you. Like, I don't want to kind of say all comedians should do it. My favorite comedian, Stuart Lee, and I think he's so good.
You introduced me to him. He's absolutely brilliant.
And the reason why I like Stuart Lee is because, again, it's not that, it's like, it's critique. It's not critique. It's not critique in the service of a particular political party. It is the exposure of just inherent problems and antagonisms in life that both conservatives and liberals can potentially agree with.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of transcends the party politics, but it does something deeper. That's what I think the best comedy does. And I worry that a lot of comedians are being pushed into not being able to make certain jokes because they will offend kind of either like a university audience or, you know.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about I'm going to this college show and on I guess Friday. I'm Friday. Holy crap! I'm doing the fly to Canada, drive to New York kind of thing. And the restrictions, they always have like a list of things that you can't talk about on stage. Yeah, and this says no restrictions. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, either this is a lie,
mm-hmm.
or it's rare, or it's a sign of, you know, maybe the universities are kind of loosening up on what comedians can and can't say. Or maybe they just, if they don't like what I say, they won't invite me back. Not that I say anything crazy, but that's an interesting thing that's happening where it's like, it's like, are comedians scared of the universities in a way that is actually legitimate? Like when people freak out about safe spaces and I'm like, I never really hear about safe spaces. Like, is this one of those things that's like, kind of like we're all pretending that it exists and that it's a bigger problem than it actually is. But anyway, that's a possibility. I don't know, whatever. Another thing that's interesting, and like on the political thing, and the why conservative comedians aren't funny tangent, I think, is like dangerous in that it assumes that if you're conservative, you can't be funny, I think. And I think we're saying that's not true at all.
Yeah, it's not true at all.
I hang out with conservatives, especially when I go to Florida, and they are by and large sometimes funnier than people I hang out with out here. Like, so funny.
Yeah.
And
that's the same in Northern Ireland, actually. Some of the people who are like very, what's called loyalist or whatever, they are very incredibly funny.
It's almost like they're kind of,
but you know, and you know partly why, like I genuinely think that for some of these communities they feel like under threat. And I think that's where comedy is at its best,
right? You know? It's so and they're able to, like, I mean, there's been so many like campfires that I've been around in Florida and like so many parties that I've been to in Florida where it's like These are people who are unbelievably hysterical to hang out with. And I feel personally, as a more liberal person, more relaxed around these concerns. I mean, that might be just, you know, my upbringing and it's like home or whatever. But even if that's not the case, even if I'm not really related to them, I'm still like, oh, these are people who I can take a deep breath around, because I know that they're not going to be monitoring everything that I say, monitoring my language. And so there is kind of the comedy club atmosphere where it's like, we're here, we're hanging out. It's like the poker night thing where it's like, we're free to chill and not, you know.
I mean, maybe a way of saying it, I feel like I'm always nervous about when I like not having time to think about the topics or whatever. But here's the way I think about it, is that I think it's very hard to be a conservative, a liberal or progressive who's funny, in the sense of if you're trying to be funny as those things. But you can be a conservative, liberal or progressive and be funny, as in, you know, we transcend those identities. And whenever you transcend those identities, you can see the ridiculous parts of life and your family and your community, and you can laugh and you can joke about that stuff. And it's just whenever you try to use comedy in service of these positions that I think it becomes more difficult.
So interesting. There's some sort of like weird parallel with like, there's like a sacrilegious thing that happens where it's like the moment you try to use, it's like with great power comes great responsibility. And then like you try to use this holy thing that transcends political, you know, ideology, which of course would be comedy. And you try to take this thing that's so much higher than your little cute opinions that you have. And then you try to use that thing that was never intended to support your opinions, because it exists above your opinions.
Yeah.
The moment you do that, it's like you are now not funny.
Yes, that's exactly, you're saying exactly right. Like that I think is the argument I'm trying to make, is that comedy, the very form of comedy, is radical. And it's radical because it fundamentally exposes things. But when that form is used in the service of a political agenda, it will dull it. I mean, it might still be amusing, but it will dull it. There is something almost sacred about comedy as a form, but it has to be protected from the perversity of like actual denominations.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a prophet who is, you know, in religious terms, who is then domesticated into a denomination.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a comedian is always in danger of being brought into a to represent a certain party or set of people. But the great thing about comedians is most of them don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the great thing of hanging around with comedians, whether they're nice people or not nice people. Most of them have this failure, this inability to care about what other people think. Obviously, everyone cares, but they care less.
Yeah, I look forward to being that kind of comedian. I saw this comment on, we did this video on the Valley Folk called Compliment Bullies.
And it's very good.
Thank you. And I play a character called Eggs, and I don't have any lines, but it's really absurd and dumb, and I'm like jumping all around and being a ham. And somebody left a comment yesterday on the video that just said, a lot of SJW stuff in here. You know, this is really a lot of SJW stuff. Because, you know, it's got like Joe, who's playing the alpha male bully. And at one point he's like, Jimmy doesn't have a dad. Jimmy doesn't have a dad because he's got two hot moms. And it's like a compliment. But it's, you know, also I guess that would be considered SJW stuff. I'm assuming that's what they were talking about.
Yeah.
But I was like, I replied to the comment from our account and I was like, first of all, Eggs is the only social justice warrior in this video. And it's like basically saying like my character who says nothing is the one that has all these like really, you know, stark political opinions. But it was one of those things that's like whatever, you know, like, yeah, it's,
well, one of the things I liked about that, one of the things I liked about that sketch is that it problematizes the like people who are in the social justice warrior stuff and people who are very critical of PC stuff will both find enough in that sketch to both be offended by and also affirm.
Lack in excess.
That's exactly it. That's the topic. So that, and that's one of the things I liked about it is looking at it and going, oh, that blurs boundaries that are like we think are in stone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a wall between two groups of people, and like a small sketch like that has this ability to kind of break the wall down. And momentarily, both sides can laugh at it and also feel a little bit of a sting.
Yeah, yeah. And then when you see comments like that, there's a little bit of like, oh, it did do something. Or you know that that particular viewer is just seeing things so readily through that filter that there's no getting through that. Like yeah. some people, they just have the glasses on and they're like so thick and they can't see. And I get it. And it's like, we all go through different things and everyone gets very entrenched in their opinions, but it's yeah. at some point it's like, no, this is, it's yeah. okay. Like if there's yeah. a little SJW stuff or if there's a little bit of like, you know.
And the blurring of that, like we were at a comedy show last week and I really enjoyed it. And some of the comedians, again, they were blurring the line. Like whatever.
Taylor Tomlinson did a few that were just out of this world funny.
Is that right?
I'm assuming that's who you're talking
about. I'm sure
about.
It is. I forget
she
the name.
She did some jokes.
That, she was very good.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. if anybody's listening, you're looking for new comedians. Taylor Tomlinson is so freaking funny. She yeah. was. She did some kind of like, I forget the joke that she made, but it was something that just, it hurt me. Like yeah. it tore off some kind of like yeah. thing of like being, you know, a young, oh my God, she's so good. But anyway.
And it most of the comedians there, they really did blur the distinctions that are very big in LA. You know, there's very solid kind of what you should think and what you shouldn't think. And it wasn't that they were against what you should think, because sometimes they were making jokes and they were like, that was very kind of on, you know, on the mark of what LA people think. And then there was some stuff that wasn't. And then they would make jokes about that. Like, oh, I've just lost the crowd now, yeah. you know. But that's the beauty of comedy, is it somehow, like your dad watched that comedy show. And although it was critical of his position, he was able to, because he's a nice guy and a thoughtful guy as well, he was able to go, I can take that.
Yep.
I can take that dig.
Yep.
And also then, so again, that's the transcendent nature of good comedy, is Bill Hicks was the master of it, you know. It's offensive and yet somehow it offends everybody and so it offends nobody.
Right.
That was actually when I set up a community in Belfast, that was one of our taglines, was, you know, we try to offend everybody so as to offend nobody. And it was like the equal opportunities digs. And in that way, it blurred all of these distinctions.
Right.
Between atheist and theist, actually, we were playing with that boundary, because people think that boundary is solid.
Yeah, there's an interesting there too, where it's like, well, you offend everybody. And then there is some kind of thing where it's like, well, you know, maybe you don't need to offend everybody. Maybe you can offend nobody. And then it's like, well, the purpose, like you're saying, the purpose of offending everyone is not to, it has nothing to do with offend. There is a motivation behind it, which yes. is to
And it was tongue in cheek. That was the other thing. It was always tongue in cheek. Like, course, we said yeah. that as going, like, the people we people we want to offend is ourselves. Like, the people who are organizing it. In fact, we would meet and go, right, what can we do to offend ourselves? Like, what can we do that will get us to think? But so a great comedian, not always, but often the comedians that I enjoy, they, again, whether you're a progressive or conservative or radical or whatever you are, there's like this strange sense in which they challenge you, they make you laugh, they might make you cry, and you might come out feeling a little bit more human and treating other people in a more humane way.
Like yeah.
That's what my worry is, when comedy then becomes too closely tied to a position.
Yep.
Yeah. Because it's the form of comedy is itself radical.
Especially because it's like your position's going to come out. Like you don't gotta you know, mail it to people.
Yeah.
Or telegraph it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty old school. It'd be email.
You don't have to Morse code it. To yeah. people, whatever you want to say. But
send the pigeon. You don't need to send the pigeon.
Yeah. yeah. Like if yeah. you're halfway like political person, just be yourself, and your where you stand will be evident.
But so, then like, this is a thing for us to talk about, because for me, I think politics is pretty much sadly dead at the moment in the US, but. Because I actually think that the true political position might be the comedic position, which is, like, instead of these different parties that basically affirm the way the world is, it's just some people say, well, we need to let more people in
yeah.
to the game that we're playing. A radical politics is a critique of the game itself. And I think that's what comedians do. So a comedian might have a political perspective. They might be in America Republican or Democrat, but also maybe they're political with a capital P, which is they're, you know, it's not like in a football team where they're on one side or the other. It's that they're questioning the entire game that we're playing.
Yeah, there is an interesting where it's like the conversation does quickly, like I know in my personal political world, very quickly any political conversation will come down to like, oh, the society is, we're broken right now, and the internet has broken us, and the internet is changing us in ways that we don't understand, and we are all trying to figure it all out, and it's utter chaos right now, but we're all pretending it's not chaos. And that tends to be what like informs my like jokes on a political level. But it is interesting that it's like, no, like I don't give a crap.
And that's why you'll find yourself sometimes at one side of the political spectrum with one joke, and at the other side with another joke. Because if you give yourself insert, if you're an apostle of the impossible, if you're an apostle of the absurd, like if you're an apostle of the antagonism of existence, then you transcend the denominational differences of politics.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we need to be. We need to be apostles of the antagonism of life. And I think a lot of comedians are that.
Yeah, I agree. Know?
And they need to be protected from domestication.
You know what? I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah.
I think aren't fine shouldn't, it's, you know, it's survival of the fittest, you know. If it ends up being that they get whatever, I mean, maybe not. I guess that's a harsh thing to say, but because sometimes unfair things happen. But how do you protect them? You know.
Yeah.
They can't be protected.
I know, that's true.
They would reject your protection anyway. Yeah. They'd feel it was condescending, so they would go, "I'm fine. I'm gonna say whatever I'm gonna say."
Yeah.
And then delete the tweets later.
Like, who was that guy who you introduced me to, or you didn't, but I watched him and said, I watched this guy. He was very, very offensive, very funny. He lives in L.A.
Jeselnik?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My goodness.
His jokes are just... one of my jokes was inspired by him.
Is that right?
Yeah. I tried to write the offensive Anthony Jeselnik style joke, which was, I was driving around with my dad, and he was pointing at a house. He said the man in that house was just arrested for plotting to kill his wife and three kids. And I was like, you see, Dad, this is why I moved, because no one in this town has any follow through. And that was a joke.
That's
I wrote
a very Jeselnik type joke.
Yeah, very. I was like, how do you, because he always does that like murderous joke, which is a whole other conversation we could get into, because I always feel guilty admitting that, like, did I steal his joke? But it's not at all his joke.
Yeah.
But I literally was like, I'm going to write a joke in that style. And so I don't know where the lines are myself there. That's another thing where it's like, I don't get super in my head about that stuff. But other friends that I have are very, very sensitive to that. Like, they would never attempt, but I'm like, man, it's fun. It's like a writing exercise. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, here, instead of like the regular takeaway, maybe the takeaway today would be, what comedians would you recommend the listeners? And I'll say
great.
A couple of recommendations.
That's super fun. Yeah. So here's my takeaway. There's all the mainstays that I think anybody my age probably is familiar with. There's the Mulaney's, Pete Holmes. I think Jeselnik is funny, but Bo Burnham, Nate Bargatze, Norm Macdonald, Gary Shandling, Tom Segura. And Dimitri Martin's very funny. And currently young comedians, Taylor Tomlinson, Becky Robinson, and Whitmer Thomas.
Whoa, honestly, I will be listening back just to kind of go through them.
They're fun ones. Yeah,
that's very good.
Taylor Tomlinson's available on the Netflix show, The Comedy Lineup. Whitmer's available on Twitter, I guess. He has a really good podcast episode with Pete Holmes. And, Becky is doing all sorts of other stuff. So, yeah.
All right, good. Well, your takeaway, and this is much more authoritative than mine, I'll just mention Stuart Lee, because I think he's well worth watching. Very, very good. He's got a good stand-up called 51st Best Comedian, but he's got lots of good stuff out there. Because he was voted 51st Best Comedian.
Oh, Judah Friedlander is another one that's super underrated.
Who's that? Right?
Judah Friedlander. He has a comedy special called... America is the greatest country in the United States.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's a very good title.
He's so funny and brilliant. So yeah, that's a good one. But okay, Stuart Lee.
And then I'll just mention Mitchell and Webb.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, it's silly. It's obvious for anybody who knows me now that I'm obsessed with Peep Show.
It's always playing.
It's always playing.
It's just your office, but I always can hear that like nervous cadence and whatever that one character. And then
I don't know why, because I don't watch things repetitively at all, except for.
Yeah, everyone needs their
thing, and that's it. And their other stuff is also very perceptive. They're very smart
They're so freaking funny, man.
Yeah. In his day, there was a guy called, he's not very interesting in a kind of political sense or whatever, but Jack D is another British comedian who he doesn't do much now, but in his heyday was cool. Very good. So
that's
very
fun. Good. Cool. All right. Well, this has been a fun conversation. Thanks, Pete.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.